Welcome back, everyone. This is the continuation of the oral arguments with the Nevada Court of Appeals. I saw in the front row two judges during the break that I didn't see earlier on. We have United States Magistrate Judge here, William Cobb, and also Ninth Judicial District Court Judge Tom Gregory here. And from Minden, Judge Gregory is my successor on the district court bench. So I assume you're here for the Judicial College General Jurisdiction course. Okay. All right, we'll proceed then with the next argument. That's case 62493, Goodwin versus Jones. This is a case involving unemployment benefits. And it all for any students here, it deals with obtaining a college degree and then also a license to be a substance abuse counselor. So we thought many of you would be interested in that. All right, Mr. Morris.
Yes, thank you.
Proceed then for the appellant, Ms. Goodwin.
Thank you, Your Honors. And for the benefit of the audience, yes, this is an appeal of the denial of unemployment benefits, which doesn't really happen at the district court level. It happens in front of the Employment Security Division. It's designed for people to represent themselves. And we're here on several issues that surround the denial of unemployment for Ms. Goodwin based upon her not obtaining a college degree. So the issues are whether there was misconduct, which is some sort of willful violation, wrongful doing, and whether it's connected with work. In addition, we're putting out that there was not a proper inquiry being made as to whether the burden was met to deny Ms. Goodwin her unemployment benefits and whether she was even on notice of the requirements. So to clarify, there is a distinction here. Ms. Goodwin was not hired as a counselor. The record's very clear she was hired as an administrator. And this puts forward a legal issue as to whether there's any evidence whether she was even required to have, not a license, she was working towards her license, but whether she had her intern certification. Now, there's clear evidence that the certification was needed to be current to work as a counselor. But again, she did not work as a counselor, she worked as an administrator.
Well, but if your employer tells you to do it, whether or not the law would otherwise require it, isn't that now a requirement of a job?
Whether the law requires...
Essentially, what I'm gathering is your argument is, look, just because she's an administrator, it would not have been unlawful for her not to be a certified counselor, okay? But that may be a legal requirement, but if she's hired as an administrator and the employer has his own private policy, I want administrators to have this licensing requirement apart from what the law requires, isn't that now a job requirement?
No, it has to be reasonably related. I mean, we can look at, let's say it's a housekeeper, someone just doing a cleanup work around the employer's office, and they say, we want you to have a PhD, and they don't get a PhD within 10 years. That's not reasonable. Again, that goes to the misconduct must be related to work. And we're drawing a distinction here between the ability to discharge an employee because you don't like the employee, it's some subjective standard, they can't lift enough, we don't have the education you want, versus the objective standard as to whether it was actually required for her to do this work, and whether now there was misconduct shown, legal misconduct, to deny her unemployment benefits.
Well, there was no allegation of any misconduct at Ms. Goodwin's work. How do you reconcile her off-duty conduct involving her licensure, with Nevada law providing intentional misconduct denies a claimant benefits?
Well, I would answer that the record's completely void on that issue. Anything that we see is she testified that she always took the maximum classes she could. She kept working towards getting her license extended, if possible. There were only so many classes offered each semester, and where the record's void is, there's no inquiry into, well, how many classes were possible? Could you take more? Well, the record's clear. No, I took the maximum possible. Do you need a particular class to take that particular class? We all know we've been through college. Often to get this class required to graduate, you need another class as a prerequisite, but you can't take that class until the following year, so you can't even get to the class you need to graduate until later. There's no inquiry made. The only It's a presumption. You didn't get your college degree within this period of time. It must be misconduct. It's a pure presumption. The record only states you did everything possible.
Well, but the period of time is 10 years. Right? If the employer had said, look, I want you to get a college degree in 1 year, I think pretty much everybody in this room would say that's a little bit unreasonable. You really have to take a million classes every semester to do it. But, you know, the average college degree you can get within 4 or 5 years, and it's going to give her 10 years. So how can you say that she did everything possible when I don't have any statistics, but I would guess most people get their college degree in less than 10 years.
Well, again, and that's where I'm going with presumption. Most of us in this room are probably very fortunate to have been able to do that. Not everyone is. The record's very clear. She's a single mom of 3 children. She's working full-time. She's having to attend this particular school. These are the classes being offered, and there's a little void there, but she took the classes being offered. There's only so many classes offered each quarter, and that's what she pursued.
Why did she get her associate's degree then before getting the required degree for her job?
Well, the required degree is a bachelor's, and I assume it's a pure assumption that it's less expensive to go for the associate and transfer the credits in. The record's void on that, too. But
the administrative officer focused on that, that she really wanted to get her associate's degree, and the officer thought that distracted her away from getting her bachelor's degree. She could have started on the bachelor's sooner. We don't know. We don't have much of a record on it. But sometimes people take classes, like you said, go from one class to the next, and she might have needed that for the associate's when the focus could have been on getting a bachelor's degree.
And the record is vacant there. And I would like to get back to another point, that her job duties did not require her to obtain a college degree. What it required specifically was that she maintain a proper license or internship, quote, when appropriate. And that was one of my arguments. If it was actually required, it would not use the language when appropriate. Now, as a document presented to unemployment, they referenced a counselor's description. And the counselor's description, which was not hers, does state that you must maintain your internship certificate. And again, we're back to the willfulness. Was she recklessly disregarding obtaining her degree, which was impacting her work? Again, it must be connected with work. Was it willful, or was she doing what was within her means? Now, the state did present a case where it shows, well, this teacher didn't get their degree within a proper period of time. That was found to be willful misconduct. Again, that's another state's jurisdiction. But that state found there was an inquiry made into why that did not occur. The teacher simply ignored taking classes, I believe, for 2 years and did not work towards it. In this case, we just have a different standard. And again, there's a complete difference between an employer being able to place some subjective standard saying, I don't want you, versus can we deny this individual?
But your excuse, your class excuse here was she couldn't get a degree in 10 years just because she had all these family obligations and kids and that kind of thing, right? So here's my question for you. Okay, under federal law, an employer can't discriminate against an employee because they have kids, right? That's illegal. But the flip side of that is, okay, if I can't refuse to hire you because you have kids, then how can you use your kids as an excuse not to do what my other employees are required to do?
Well, it's not using her children to not do something that employees are required to do. It's simply, again, this is not related to work. She's doing her job. There's no doubt about it. They liked her. They wanted to retain her. My argument is it's not misconduct. They didn't say it's not misconduct, I don't believe, but they said, had we had a position available, we would have retained her. She did a good job, in essence. I don't believe there is any sort of... There's different types of employment discrimination, but I'm not aware of one on family obligations. However,
I liked her. Why didn't they grant her an extension? That's what she was asking.
And that was her understanding as what would occur, and this happened during, and there's some of this on the record, this happened during a flux. All of a sudden, all these people were coming forward that were possibly needing to get the license that were not completing their degree within the period of time. The law just went into effect 10 years ago. Now we have the 10-year deadline. It's having to be reviewed, and people aren't sure what to do about it. There were hearings on it. There was a follow-up hearing on it, which is not in the record. And to be honest, I don't know what happened there. But that shows they are considering her, and that's part of the diligence. I can't make it. I'm not finishing my classes. I'm not ignoring it. I'm going to try to get an extension so I can keep working for you. And again, that's not...
Well, I looked at that issue very closely in the record because I was concerned there might be some sort of estoppel argument that could be made. And the representations to her were vague. No one ever told her, you're going to get an extension, take your time, nothing like that. It was just that you could ask for an extension.
That is correct, but it goes down to, was she doing what she could within her ability once she was not going to make it? She was only a few credits shy of getting her college degree. Granted, it didn't occur within the 10-year time period, but she's now doing something else to try to keep that going. And what I'd also like to...
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask you if you wanted to retain any time for rebuttal, first of all. And secondly, I don't know that you finished your opening argument that she was an administrator, not a counselor, and therefore none of these requirements even applied to her.
Well, I mean, that was part of my objective argument, Sean. That's a legal issue, and it's not shown in the record or even shown that is required for a job as an administrator. The Nevada administrative codes that were cited, the NRS's codes that were cited, were clearly for drug counselors, alcohol abuse counselors, not someone working at administrative level, including, if there is some sort of janitor or housekeeper working, they can't place that requirement on. And yes, I'd like to reserve my retaining time. Thank you.
Okay. All right, you have a full 5 minutes then for a rebuttal, Mr. Morris. All right, we have the respondent. And I just said, Jones, it's two lines long on our agenda about who the respondent is in this case. We have Mr. Lombardo here today representing the respondent. Essentially, it's the Department of Employment Training and Rehabilitation, Employment Security Division.
That's correct, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Well, there were some interesting arguments from Mr. Morris. I hope you're going to address those.
I plan on addressing those, yes, Your Honor.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Neil Lombardo. I'm the Senior Attorney for the Employment Security Division. In 1933, to combat the Great Depression, Senator Wagner and Representative Pizer created the Wagner-Pizer Act, which is today known as the Unemployment Compensation Benefits, or Unemployment Insurance. The framework of those statutes require that a worker who is ready, willing, and able to work and meet the requirements of their employer should receive unemployment if they're not able to have a job. But if they are unable or unwilling to meet the requirements of their employer, then they are not entitled to benefits. The brief that is put forth by the appellant specifically says it's an inherent right to receive unemployment. It is not. And the state has ruled in the King case and throughout the United States that it is not an inherent right to receive unemployment. In fact, the Nevada legislature has said in several different instances a person is not entitled to unemployment. One such instance is the instance in this case, which is misconduct. Now, I recognize...
I want to ask about the misconduct issue. This appellant, she just figured that she would get an extension from the Board of Examiners, and therefore she didn't take the extra classes, just a couple classes, to meet the necessary deadline. How does that constitute intentional misconduct in conjunction with Nevada law?
Well, in Bonham, the Supreme Court defined misconduct not only as a deliberate violation or disregard of reasonable standards of behavior, which an employer has the right to expect, they also define misconduct as carelessness or negligence that shows a complete disregard of the employer's interests or, and I think this is the most important line, employee's duties and obligations to her employer. Now, I recognize that the appellant relies on the fact that the record is devoid, and that's the argument, that the record is lacking in this case. However, the record is actually quite clear and favors the decision of the Board of Review. In fact, page 79, referring to the joint appendix. So on page 79, it specifically says, and this is the appellant's own testimony, that on January 20, 2001, she received her intern counselor license, knowing that in 10 years, she had to have her bachelor's degree so that she could receive her full counselor's license. She began employment in September of 2003 with Bristlecone, the employer in this case. That's on page 54. She worked there until July of 2011, again on page 54. She did testify that she was a drug court administrator, that is correct, page 54, but she also knew on page 55 she specifically answered the question of, did you understand that you had to obtain your full license and get your bachelor's degree within 10 years, and she specifically said, yes ma'am, I did. She knew what was required to keep the position as a court administrator.
So here's the argument that your counterpart is making. Bonham has some interesting language in it, which unfortunately hasn't really been fleshed out in a bunch of subsequent cases, but here's the language. Misconduct is defined as a deliberate violation or disregard on the part of the employee, and here's the interesting part, of standards of behavior which his employer has the right to expect. Now his argument is this, and I even asked this question to him. Okay, there's what your employer has the right to expect certain things. There's subjective things. I just want you to do the job the way that I want you to do the job. But Bonham has this language, standard behavior which his employer has the right to expect. He's saying that also puts an objective component to it. It's not just what your employer personally wants of his employees, but there must be some objectively reasonable basis for it. And his argument is, okay, in this case, the employer wanted this particular employee to get a bachelor's degree, but under state law, it's not required, and so it wasn't objectively reasonable for the employer to ask that of his employees. I gather that's his argument. What's your response to that?
Well, the response is clear on its face, in my mind, in that an employer can require whatever they desire to fill the position. Just because state law doesn't say a drug court administrator must have a bachelor's degree and receive a drug and alcohol license.
Well, at some level, I mean, would you believe that? At some level, there has to be objective reasonable aspect to it. If you can't ask someone to violate state law. If I hire you to kill a guy, okay, that's not a legal task. There has to be some minimal objective component. Right, and so aren't we talking about, would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I guess there's some subjective component and there's some objective component. Here's what the record shows, is that the record shows that the employer felt, because the drug court administrator was doing some counseling, and that's, if you read the record, they specifically said, they being Bristlecone, specifically said, we can't keep her because we would be in violation of our license. So they're stuck in this position of, well, we're going to violate our own license by maintaining her. And so that's the issue and the conundrum that they were placed in. And I think it's important to point out that when she received the job, she knew that the license was required, and there was a typo in our brief that we referred to the wrong page, and I'd like to clear this up, is the 2006 evaluation that was done of the appellant in this case is actually JA 81, 82, and 83, and it specifically says in there that you must maintain your license or licensure, and it does say where applicable, but you have to refer back to when she was hired 3 years earlier. She said, I know I have to have this license. And to prove that she knew she had to have the license, every year she went to the board of examiners, and every year she renewed her intern license, which was required by them. She knew that this was a requirement. And in fact, the fact that she was doing the best she could to receive a license shows she knew that this was a requirement.
Mr. Lombardo, what if all of that is true and she was performing in a counselor role, but if she switched to an administrative role with the drug court and wasn't actually doing counseling, would you look at the present situation and say, well, yeah, she did have to have it under the original terms of her hire, but now she's doing something else?
But that's not what the evidence shows, Your Honor. She was hired as a drug court administrator knowing that she had to have this intern license and knowing that within 10 years she had to get her bachelor's degree to be a fully licensed counselor.
So even as an administrator, she'd have to have it.
That was their requirement. That was Bristlecone's requirement.
And you implied that Bristlecone thought she was doing some counseling and they didn't want to put themselves in a position where they violated the law.
Which is in the emails, I don't recall the page, but it's an email that she sent saying, I can no longer do counseling work, she being the appellant. And So the record is not devoid. The record is substantial, and it's important to point out that the United States Supreme Court in Perales defined substantial evidence, which is what this court has to look for as the reviewing court, as that evidence which might move the mind to make a conclusion. There's pages and pages. First of all, I've already presented to you the own testimony of the appellant, but there's also the testimony of the employer in this case, who sent the letter in 2006, which specifically said that this was a requirement, she knew it was a requirement, she didn't meet this requirement. There's also the testimony of the HR director, who said, we hired her as a drug court administrator, we told her that this was a requirement, and again, she didn't meet this requirement. The letter, I see Judge Tao looking, was on page 79, the promotion, the evaluation, which indicated that she had to have her licenses on page 81 and 83, and again, looking at the tenure requirement, the testimony of the employers on pages 47 through 51. So when this court looks at and has to apply whether or not there's substantial evidence, you don't get to put yourself in the position of the Board of Review. You are just simply a reviewing court. You may disagree, and there's case law point in administrative cases that say you may disagree with the decision, but if there's substantial evidence, which I submit there is in this case, then you cannot replace the Board of Review's judgment and decision with your own.
Are you familiar with that? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to ask you about the way the board framed the decision, misconduct. In looking at cases across the country, which we've had to do because there's a dearth of Nevada law on this topic, sometimes the phrase has been used at voluntary quit or voluntary termination rather than misconduct. Does that apply in this situation? And does it? And the answer is yes. Does it apply when the board didn't use that language?
I don't think it applies in this situation. Under NRS 612.380, Nevada does have a voluntary quit statute. Here's why I don't think it existed, because the board has said that they feel that this evidence points to misconduct. And so I think there's a substantial evidence in the record to support that decision of the board. And so I think the board could have made some argument that voluntary quit occurred here, but they didn't. And they found that this evidence pointed to misconduct. And I think that the decision is supported by the evidence in the record. But we do have a misconduct statute as well in Nevada.
So you think we should just avoid that topic?
Excuse me, voluntary quit statute. I do. It's not part of the record. And so your standard of review for an administrative law case is whether or not there is substantial evidence in the record to support the finding of the Board of Review. If you find that there's not, I think the appropriate remedy would be, and I guess I'm arguing his side now, but I think the appropriate remedy would be to remand. So it's a remand down to the district court, who would then remand it to the Board of Review, who would ultimately remand it. Remand to the administrative law judge to make a decision. So that's, I think, how that would work if the court found to be voluntary quit.
No, actually, my question is exactly the voluntary quit question.
Mm-hmm. I think, although the appellant discounted the Jones case out of Pennsylvania, I do think that case is strikingly similar to this case. Jones was a teacher who knew she had to maintain her licensure as a teacher to continue her employment. She had family obligations. She cited that she was incredibly busy, and that's why she couldn't maintain her license. And she took 2 years to get her license. She had 2 years to meet the requirements to continue keeping her license. And she failed to meet those requirements. And here's what the Pennsylvania court pointed out. They said that she failed to act reasonably and prudently. And I think this statement is really telling. The claimant freely chose not to prudently plan her schedule to meet the requirements to maintain licensure and therefore her job. That's exactly what happened in this case. The appellant failed, and this is what the Board of Review stated, prudently and reasonably plan her schedule over 10 years,
Mind you, this is 10 years where she's reminded every year.
So you don't think the voluntary quit applies at all, even though this is so similar to Jones?
I cannot ask this court to stand. It would be improper for me to ask you to stand in the place of the Board of Review and say that it's a voluntary quit. They found that this was misconduct. But Jones, unless I misunderstood Jones was a misconduct case. So, and I think here's the important thing in Nevada's jurisdiction is the Kraft Supreme Court case, which in Kraft, they found that the employee did commit misconduct because the employee failed to act reasonably and prudently. That's exactly what the appellant did here. She failed to act reasonably and prudently to get her license. 10 years is a long time, and she knew she had to do this to keep her job. Finally, with regard to an error of law, there is no error of law here. There's no law that says that you cannot require an administrator, a court administrator, to have a drug and alcohol counseling permit or license, as alleged by the appellant. That's not the error of law. The only issue here is whether or not this was misconduct. And the last, and I think the most important thing with regard to error of law that you see in misconduct cases in Nevada, is that there must be an issue or an element of wrongfulness when the employee acted. And in this case, the Board of Review said the wrongfulness was her failure to reasonably and prudently act.
Let me ask you the exact reverse of the question I asked your counterpart here. I asked him the question about part of her excuse for not getting to being her kids, and asked that kind of loaded question about, well, if the employer can't ask about your family situation, how can you use your family situation as an excuse not to do your job? But on the other hand, there are some cases, there's one in particular from Iowa, Holt versus Iowa Department of Job Services, in which that case involved a teacher who didn't update a certification in part because she had an unforeseen family emergency. I think it was her husband who suffered a serious injury, and that caused her to drop out of school for a semester or so, and that delayed her getting a certification. And the Iowa court in that case found that that was not misconduct. So the flip side to the question I asked him is, okay, it appears that some courts at least takes some consideration of family situations, not for purposes of keeping a job, but for purposes of whether you committed misconduct for purposes of receiving unemployment benefits. What's your response to that?
Well, I think I can distinguish the case relatively easy. You said that it was an unforeseen circumstance. 10 years. It's not unforeseen. I mean, it's just not unforeseen. The difference is, in fact, she had to receive a letter from the Board of Examiners to tell her, hey, what are you doing about your license? If you don't have it by the end of June, it's revoked. What was she waiting for? And then she decided, well, maybe they'll give me a continuance. Maybe they'll give me an extension. And that was it. So it's not unforeseen. It was 10 years. Thank you.
Had they given her extensions, though, before?
The Board of Examiners, there's no evidence in the record that they had. There is some evidence that the Board of Examiners were not given extensions. The appellant is correct. This was a new process for the Board of Examiners. But it wasn't guaranteed, and there was an NAC, and it was... it's cited in our brief. There is an NAC that says if you don't get your bachelor's degree within 10 years, you lose your license.
Thank you, Mr. Rambardo.
Thank you.
Right, Mr. Morris, you're the first appellant's attorney that we've had that reserved the full time and actually stuck to it.
Oh.
So now you get the chance to say everything you want to do it where Mr. Lombardo can't come back. So have at it.
Thank you. I don't disagree with the restrictions here, how this case is to be looked at. But clearly this court can review whether a legal definition was met and whether it's supported by the evidence. And there's clearly cases doing that. I'd also like to disagree that there's nothing in the record that she wasn't pursuing her degree. I think there was a statement to the effect that she implying she took time off because she thought she was going to get an extension. That's contradictory to the record. The record's very clear. I took the maximum classes every time it was possible. And what we've heard in the argument is exactly pretty much what was presented down.
Maximum classes, you mean under her personal schedule, not maximum classes allowed?
No, the record actually, I believe, states that this is all they offered. She took all the classes possible that were offered. I believe the record's clear on that. But
what if she had skipped over the AO degree and just gone straight to the BS?
I don't know if that would have mattered. She still needs a certain number of credits to graduate and get her bachelor's. But see, this
more classes, though, could be offered at a full university rather than a community college.
Exactly. And I don't know if there were transfer issues. I, you know, didn't inquire into that. The only evidence is, what did she do versus, well, what was the issue? Were you not taking classes? There's nothing like that there. So we also heard that she was aware she needed her degree. Well, if you look at that in context, that appendix page 55, it stated, were you aware you needed a degree? And the answer was yes. The answer is yes, she needed the degree to get her license, not necessarily that she needed it to keep her job. All the evidence is, or at least argument, that you're getting information from the board, not from your employer, you need your license, that how are you doing, not from the employer. The board is saying, come check in each year, not from the employer.
What is your position as to, and we post it to respondent as well, your position regarding our inquiries about the voluntary quit issue, and is that something that is an issue in this case?
You know,
because obviously the Jones case is so similar to this case.
Well, the Jones case and the finding is similar. And I want to get back to your question in a second. But what I'm saying happened in Jones case is they did an inquiry. They found out why the teacher chose not to take classes, which is totally absent here. She took classes. They found out that she actually did not take classes for an extended period of time, which is not shown here. So the ultimate finding was the same, but the analysis is different, and I'm just stating that there was an analysis done with an inquiry, which did not happen here. And my best answer to this is I'm not sure, because this is first time this is being raised, and I haven't thought of that, just like my opposing counsel hadn't quite thought of that issue either.
Well, I mean, it's discussed in some of the cases that you guys cited. I know you didn't cite them for those propositions, but it's out there in your briefing, at least implicitly. So let me just follow up with this. Here's the structure of how voluntary quit works, okay? Normally, if an employee is ready, willing, and able to work, and they're fired by their employer for whatever reason, personal reason, or, you know, downsizing, bad economy, bankruptcy, whatever it is, you're entitled to unemployment benefits while you go get money for your next job to renew the shop deal, because you were a worker who was ready, willing, and able to work, and it wasn't your fault that you lost your job, right? But if you quit your job, you're not entitled to unemployment benefits because that was your choice. That's the structure of how workers' compensation works under federal law, right? The doctrine of voluntary quit means this. If you were fired, okay, which nominally would not have been your fault, but you caused the firing by voluntarily quitting. In other words, I'm just not going to show up for work, and I'm not going to do my job and interface boss, and you forced the boss to fire you. The doctrine is, well, that was technically a firing, but it was your fault, and because you were not ready, willing, and able to work, you're not entitled to unemployment benefits. That's the structure of the voluntary quit doctrine. So why wouldn't that apply in this case? The employer told her to do something, gave her 10 years to do it, she didn't do it, and there was some evidence that if she's an uncertified person who's providing some counseling services, the employer would have lost his license. So he has to fire her. Why wouldn't that apply here?
I'm not sure that the employer would have lost their license. That was stated that she, again, worked as an administrator. And again, in this case, they hired an intern knowing she wasn't fully licensed yet, and they took a risk, and she didn't complete it. Going to your question, it is a legal issue as to whether she needed her license, because if she did need it, there is no misconduct. That was why she was fired. But Nevada statutes specifically define misconduct. And so under NRS 612, I believe it's 385, it says the only way you can deny someone unemployment benefits is if there's misconduct. It doesn't go into other possibilities. So if the other states or other general law out there are viewing things differently, Nevada's chosen to take a different approach. It specifically defines you must give unemployment benefits unless there's misconduct.
Let me ask you a factual question. One of the emails that your counterpart mentioned was there's some evidence that she was at least asked or maybe even did provide some counseling services. In fact, there's an email in your clients sent by your client saying, I can't do these counseling things anymore because they don't have my certification. So you keep trying to say she's just administrator, but at least there appears to have been some expectation, some overlap with counseling. What's your response to that?
Well, perhaps there was, but perhaps there wasn't because that wasn't addressed. Her job, there's no inquiry into what she actually did versus what might you do on occasion. In the actual records, all that was out there was she was administrator. And that's the only way I can answer that. Perhaps she worked as a counselor on occasions. Perhaps she didn't. I'm not certain of that, and no one asked.
Mr. Morris, can you wrap it up now?
Thank you for your time. I think we've covered everything sufficiently. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, both counsel, for the excellent job. This matter will stand submitted to the court for a decision pending further discussion, research, and follow through with what happened here today. So that concludes our oral arguments that were set here at the National Judicial College. We're very thankful again to the Judicial College for hosting us. We think it's pretty exciting to be able to be here in the model courtroom. Everybody can see what an outstanding courtroom this is, and it served very well for our purposes. And the National Judicial College provides education to judges from around the United States. As I said, in Nevada, it's mandatory. Many other judges come from every state and from around the world. This is truly international. It's a fabulous institution. The service they provide is excellent. I've been to at least 5 classes here at the Judicial College, and every one of them was really outstanding. So thank you again to the Judicial College for hosting.